Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, July 17th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Summer Heat. Water break. Kids cool off at Fletcher Park Splash Pad in Mount Zion. And there's a large picture of a young man with goggles on and water splashing in his face. And the caption says, above, Faye Bland, 7, I guess it's a young girl, of Mechanicsburg enjoys the cool water at the Fletcher Park Splash Pad in Mount Zion. And another photo on the right shows Faye Bland, 7, of Mechanicsburg enjoying the cool water at Fletcher Park Splash Pad in Mount Zion. Same caption, two different pictures. And the bottom, one of the bottom pictures shows John Bland, 5, of Mechanicsburg, playing at Fletcher Park Splash Pad in Mount Zion on Wednesday. And the bottom right one shows Pepper Vogel Crofts, age 5, reacting to the dropping bucket of water at the Fletcher Park Splash Pad in Mount Zion. And they're all playing in the water and enjoying the cooling effects of the water. The Bright Side, DISC camp counselors honored for heroic response. Summer camp counselors aren't just trained to keep kids busy. They also have to keep them safe, healthy, and protected. Emma Deaton, on-site director for the Decatur Indoor Sports Center Day Camp, and her supervisor, Randy Ellis, DISC, D-I-S-C, assistant manager and day camp administrator, were celebrated during Wednesday's Decatur Park District board meeting for their heroic efforts in helping a camper during a medical emergency. On July 2nd, with high temperatures and humidity, a 10-year-old camper had an asthma attack while on a field trip to Rotary Park. "We were having our luau day," Ellis said. The boy's mother warned the camp leaders that the heat could cause the condition to worsen. If he got into a coughing fit or early stages of an asthma attack, he couldn't get out of it and it would go full-blown, Deaton said. Various warning signs were explained to the camp staff. A headache turned out to be the boy's first sign, followed by slurred speech, according to Deaton. "Then he started getting worse," she said. "His reaction time and his responses were getting really slow." Counselors stayed with the boy under a pavilion with cool clothes and a fan to keep him relaxed and as cool as possible, while his mother and an ambulance were contacted. Other camp counselors took on the responsibility of keeping the other campers' attention during the commotion. "My staff did really well, keeping them calm, keeping them quiet and out of the way," Deaton said. Shortly after the emergency medical technicians began treating the child at the scene, he went into a full asthma attack, Deaton said. "They got there just in time," she said. "If Mom didn't tell us his symptoms at the beginning of the week, it would have been far too late." The ambulance transported the child to a local hospital, with Deaton riding with them and Ellis driving his own vehicle. At the hospital, the child received various nebulizer treatments and a large dose of steroids to pull him out of the attack. "He has recovered from the incident," the staff said. The counselor's training helped them handle the situation, as well as rebound from the scary incident. "We handled it really well," Deaton said. "Our staff did really amazing, especially with the training that they've had. They really used it. The high temperatures and humidity have returned this week, keeping the camp counselors alert. We're back to summer chaos," Deaton said. "Back to the summer heat and a lot of kids," Ellis said. And this article is labeled The Bright Side. The Bright Side highlights uplifting moments across our community. And if you want to read more, visit their website and share your ideas. The Bright Side, where good news lives. Let's have more good news. And the photo here that accompanies this article on the front page shows Decatur Indoor Sports Center camp directors Emma Deaton and Randy Ellis being honored Wednesday for steps taken to provide aid to a camper suffering from a medical emergency. And in the picture are Decatur Park District Board Commissioners Stacy Young, Kristen White, Deaton, Ellis, and Chris Harrison. And they're standing in front of plaques. One of the plaques here says has a lot of names on it. Said a tribute to commissioners of the Decatur Park District and other award type things on the wall. Also on the front page, state news, Illinois Education, state's AI guidelines written with AI's help. The Illinois State Board of Education released new guidelines recently on how schools should and should not use artificial intelligence in K-12 education. One of the most notable aspects of the AI guidelines, however, is that it was written with help from popular AI programs, including ChatGPT, Claude, and Gemini. Bill Curtin, Illinois Policy Director for the nonprofit advocacy group Teach Plus, one of the groups that push for the guidance, called that an example of how AI should be treated in academic fields. Up front, they said, we use AI, and they were very clear and specific about how they used AI, Curtin told Capital News Illinois. And that actually builds trust, because these days you can look at almost anything anyone writes and wonder if it's AI. It's much better when up front you say, we did use AI, and here's where, and here's where the human element is, still seen in this guidance. Here's where the human element is really still seen in this guidance. Growing concerns over AI. The guidance was issued after the General Assembly passed legislation in 2025 requiring ISBE to develop guidelines on using AI in education. Senate Bill 1920 came amid growing concern about students using AI programs like ChatGPT to help them with their research or even to write essays. At the same time, teachers and administrators were also looking for guidance on constructive ways they could use AI for things like developing lesson plans or grading students' work. A 2024 survey of Illinois educators concluded by Teach Plus and the Illinois Digital Educator Alliance, or IDEA, found a common concern that misuse of AI could threaten student learning. Respondents also expressed concerns that AI systems could endanger student privacy and expose them to inaccurate or even harmful information. Schools are behind, one educator responding to the survey said. Students utilize AI often and we have nothing in place. It is a bit like the Wild West right now. The legislation directed ISBE to develop guidance that would include, among other things, specific ways artificial intelligence can be used at the district, school, and classroom levels to inform teaching and learning practices. It also called for guidance on best practices for developing student literacy in artificial intelligence and engaging students in age-appropriate discussions on the responsible and ethical use of artificial intelligence. ISBE guidance. That guidance was released on July 9th. The 409-page document was developed with input from a blue-ribbon panel of experts in education, technology, and public policy. But it also includes a note saying, initial drafts for this guidance used AI, ChatGPT primarily, but to a lesser extent, Claude and Gemini. It goes on to say that after initial language was crafted, the authors used AI prompts to find links and verification that outside resources were publicly verifiable and available. The note also says AI was used to generate and edit graphic figures used in the document. And it says AI was used to polish the text by asking questions such as, what might be missing from this section, or what would be clearer in this section? And in places where AI was used to generate information, the note says that information was vetted outside of AI. The guidance itself, however, emphasizes that teaching and learning are shaped by human relationships and experiences, and that artificial intelligence is only a tool to inform teaching and learning, not a substitute for human interaction. Our responsibility is to help schools navigate new technologies in a way that strengthens instruction, protects students, and builds trust for informed AI use between districts and the families and communities they serve, State Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders said in a statement. The document itself is dense with academic and education-related language. And while it does not lay out rules for mandates about how schools and districts should use AI, it does offer some practical advice for teachers and other professionals who are considering using AI in the classroom or in school operations. For example, one section on selecting AI applications offers a list of questions teachers might ask before choosing an AI product, such as, what is the learning problem I'm solving? And is AI the right tool for that problem? And if AI were unavailable tomorrow, what would I do instead? And is that actually better for the learning goal? But when it comes to preventing students from using AI as a tool to cheat, Curtin said that's an issue teachers have confronted since the advent of pocket calculators and personal computers. Students have always found ways to cheat, and teachers have always responded, he said. That's a practice-level issue. They're going to, given enough time to catch up and learn AI, find ways to adapt in the classroom and make sure that students are still learning. That's a practice issue, not a policy one. A policy issue, he continued, is putting together the framework by which teachers can develop the skills and ethics and mindsets in students where they can really be successful and use it ethically. In more local news on page A2, Macon County Health Department, back-to-school clinics scheduled. The Macon County Health Department has scheduled back-to-school clinics from July 21st to October 13th. All Macon County students are eligible to attend. Students will be able to receive age, grade-appropriate immunizations, physicals, lead testing, and dental screenings on select dates. These events are walk-in only on a first-come, first-served basis. Physicals are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Tuesday, July 21st, Tuesday, August 11th, Tuesday, September 15th, Thursday, October 1st, and Tuesday, October 13th. Lead testing and immunizations, 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. and 1 to 3 p.m., Tuesday, July 21st, Tuesday, August 11th, Tuesday, September 15th, Thursday, August 1st, and Tuesday, October 13th. Physicals. Lead testing, immunizations, and dental screenings, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, August 1st, and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday, August 13th, and Tuesday, October 6th. Parents and guardians are asked to bring insurance cards and health records if possible. If you can't attend one of these scheduled events, call 217-423-6988 and choose option 2 to make an appointment. Again, that's 217-423-6988, option 2. Health Department urges families to complete school health requirements as soon as possible and not wait until the school's deadline of October 15. Students who have not completed health requirements will be excluded from school as of that date. Coles County. Antique Farm Equipment Club sets summer show. Sorry, the page just went wonky. The 2026 East Central Illinois Antique Farm Equipment Club Summer Show is set to continue today, Friday, July 17th, and Saturday, July 18th, at the Coles County Fairgrounds. vintage tractors made by John Deere International Harvester, and many other manufacturers are lined up on the fairgrounds midway for the show. Many of these farm vehicles will roll out at 4:30 p.m. Friday for a tractor drive. The schedule also includes wheat threshing demonstrations at 10 a.m., that was today, and 9 a.m. Saturday, tractor dyno demonstrations at 11 a.m. both days, and tractor games at 1:30 p.m. Today, Friday, and 1 p.m. Saturday. There will be a children's pedal tractor pull at 6 p.m. Saturday, plus children's scavenger hunt activities on both days at the show. Concessions will be available on site from the Euro Shack. In more local news on page A3, Macon County Courts. Gunman receives 5-year sentence. Judge, prison term to run concurrently with 8-year sentence. Gunman LeBran M. James got sentenced to 5 years in prison, but he was more worried about an 8-year sentence he received in January. The 5-year sentence was the result of a plea deal where he admitted the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon for initiating a gunfight on a Decatur street on April 20th of 2025. Imposing that sentence at a Macon County Circuit Court hearing July 1st, Presiding Judge Thomas Griffith ordered it to run concurrent with the 8-year sentence he had given the defendant January 23rd. That had been James's punishment after the April shooting violated a 30-month sentence of probation he had received in October of 2023 after pleading guilty to the aggravated discharge of a firearm. James's defense lawyer, Mark Wyckoff, had filed a motion at the July 1st sentencing that pleaded with the judge to reconsider the severity of the 8-year sentence, with which Griffith denied. James, 22, has previously complained he doesn't do well with long bouts in custody due to the result of injuries suffered in the gun violence on April 20th. A sworn affidavit from the Decatur Police Department accused James of initiating the gunfight, but ending up getting the worst of it. The affidavit quotes witnesses who said James walked up to someone he appeared to know and said, "Brandon, is that you?" And when told it was, he was described as pulling out a handgun and opening fire. The resulting firefight ended with James being shot 10 times, and in earlier court appearances in the wake of the shooting, he had arrived in a wheelchair and said he no longer had feeling in his right arm and fingertips. His previous defense attorney, Fallon Connor, had said that staff at the Macon County Jail were only providing him with Tylenol, and so it's not mitigating any of the pain he's having. Judge Griffith did agree to recommend James for substance abuse treatment while he is incarcerated in the Illinois Department of Corrections. Also, Macon County Coroner ID shooting victim, 16. Macon County Coroner Michael D. Burkham has released the name of the teenager who has died as a result of a gunshot wound Monday night. Marlone Dishman, 16, of Decatur, was shot at approximately 9:30 p.m. at 152 Southwest Dale Avenue. He was transported to Decatur Memorial Hospital emergency room, where he was pronounced dead at 10:19 p.m. According to the initial investigation, an 18-year-old male also suffered a laceration to the facial area during the incident. Both victims were taken to the hospital. Through their investigation, the Decatur Police Department believed this was a targeted incident and there is no known ongoing threat to the public. However, the investigation is ongoing. Anyone with information on the incident is encouraged to contact the Decatur Police Department's Criminal Investigations Division at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Again, the numbers are 217-424-2734 or 217-423-8477. 423-8477. In state news, Illinois immigration enforcement arrests near courthouses persist despite state law. This is from the Chicago Tribune. Lucia Vasquez Gonzalez thought she was doing the right thing when she went to court in March. Vasquez Gonzalez migrated to the U.S. in search of a better life, but did not have legal permission to live here. In January, she was charged with one count of misdemeanor domestic battery in a confrontation with her roommate, according to court records. But she appeared before a judge hoping to take care of the matter responsibly, despite the risk posed by continuing immigration activity around Cook County courthouses. After leaving court, though, Vasquez Gonzalez said she was stopped by immigration agents a couple of blocks from the building and pulled out of her car. "I was in complete shock because I didn't know what was happening," Vasquez Gonzalez told the Tribune in Spanish. "I was like, why are they arresting me if I didn't do anything bad?" And then they said, "No, it's because you missed the first rule of immigration, which was don't get into any problems." I said, "But this is the problem I'm fixing." In December, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed into law a ban on federal agents making certain arrests near courthouses and easing a path for individuals to sue if they think their rights were violated during civil immigration arrests. The Court Access Safety and Participation Act, which is being challenged by the Trump administration, followed an order issued by Cook County's chief judge at the time, Tim Evans, similarly barring civil immigration enforcement around county courthouses. Despite the measures, though, the presence of immigration agents around Cook County courthouses is stubbornly persistent, according to a Tribune review of a tracker maintained by the Cook County Public Defender's Office. Since the beginning of the year, immigration agents have been in or around county courthouses at least 50 times through July 9th, a rate of more than twice a week. "What they are doing is interfering with the operation of state courts," said Jonathan Maines, senior counsel for the MacArthur Justice Center's Illinois office. "They are making it very difficult for people to access justice here in Illinois." In a statement to the Tribune, a Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said immigration enforcement near courthouses is, quote, "common sense. It conserves valuable law enforcement resources because they already know where a target will be," the statement said. "It is also safer for our officers and the community." The Cook County agents have sometimes made arrests or entered the buildings, while at other times just botted nearby. But their mere presence had a chilling effect on the county's court system, stakeholders say. It had united factions of the criminal justice system that are often in opposition, as they condemn the behavior of federal agents and argue that it makes people less safe when victims and defendants are afraid to participate in the court process. It's people like Vasquez Gonzalez puts them in an impossible position, they say, as undocumented immigrants must choose between complying with their mandate to come to court or risk being detained. Court records show that Vasquez Gonzalez's misdemeanor charge was dropped after she was taken into custody by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. "I cry about this and feel so upset because I think, how many people are there robbing, killing, and doing bad things," she said, speaking by phone from Venezuela, where she'd been deported. "And I was only there as a single mother who was searching for a future for my daughter. Made their jobs impossible." Staff members for the Cook County State's Attorney's Office's Victim Services Bureau were recently working when a mother and her children facing one of the most difficult types of cases the office prosecutes. The victim specialists who work with crime survivors as well as the prosecutors handling their cases were preparing a sexual assault case involving minor victims. The children's mother, though, was afraid to bring them to court to meet to prepare testimony because of the chance of encountering immigration agents, said Kayla Johnson, chief of the Victim Services Bureau. In that case, the victim specialists arranged to do some of the prep virtually so that the family could avoid the risk of court. But while practical, in that instance, it's not ideal. It's not an ideal solution, Johnson said. People who have obviously experienced that level of trauma really benefit from the support of in-person engagement and building rapport. So that is something we are navigating alongside people, Johnson said. Setting up virtual sessions to replace in-person contact with victims is a method the Bureau has increasingly had to rely on due to immigration presence around court, as court workers across the system say they've had to modify operations in a number of ways to keep things functional. The response when these arrests picked up after the first Trump administration was so broad and brought together aspects of the justice system who are usually not in agreement with each other, said Douglas Keith, deputy director in the Brennan Center for Justice's Judiciary Program, which has tracked how similar courthouse-focused immigration enforcement unfolded in New York during President Donald Trump's first term. This was public defenders hand-in-hand with prosecutors and judges talking about how this made their jobs impossible and their communities less safe. In response, lawmakers in New York passed the Protect Our Courts Act in 2020. According to the tracker kept by the Public Defender's Office, immigration agents were sometimes seen outside courthouses or in the vicinity, but they entered court buildings at least 27 times since the beginning of the year. In the same time frame, agents have been reported in or near the domestic violence courthouse at 555 West Harrison Street, at least 22 times. Immigration enforcement around that building has raised particular concern because people seek help there in the form of orders of protection or other services. The log was compiled based on reports from the county's Building Services Department, as well as the office's clients, community responders, and other sources. Officials described it as a likely undercount based on incidents they feel they have confidently verified. In at least some cases, the presence of immigration agents has led to tumultuous clashes in or near the court buildings. In November, agents made an arrest outside the Layton Criminal Court building on the southwest side, knocking over a fence and leaving a trail of blood on the sidewalk. There are actual incidents of violence in courthouse hallways that make courthouses appear unsafe, with ICE officers chasing down their targets in hallways, Keith said. And I don't have time to finish the whole article, but there's a photo here of a woman outside a courthouse. Following earlier ICE presence and a reported arrest, activist Rachel Cohen warns people outside the domestic violence courthouse at 555 West Harrison Street in Chicago on September 3rd, 2025. And she's holding a sign, ICE is here. La migración está aquí. I can walk with you. Puedo caminar contigo. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, July 17, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.